to the Inside Pulse HTC Wrestling PulseCast. I'm your host, Matt Herrick, joined this week only by Justin Sirwaka, who was probably a little worried that I wasn't showing up, considering I logged in with about 5 seconds to go. So, Justin, before we get into anything, how are you doing since I didn't get to talk to you before the show?
I am doing okay. I got a little bit of job stuff going on with myself and my personal life, but other than that, I guess you can say I'm doing pretty well.
Well, that's good, because we don't like to hear about real stuff when we talk about fake wrestling. But that's besides the point. And as I say that, I also want to say that we are missing Cam tonight. He is AWOL due to a work schedule or a work conflict. I did try to get a guest in for us. I was unable to. I tried a couple different people, and then I went trying to get a little bit of a home run here and try to get the wrestling wife on and have her contribute to this, but she didn't think she would have enough knowledge about our topic tonight in order to put forth a nice debate and didn't want to really hinder the product. Plus, we have a four-month-old that needs to go to bed. Anyway, with that being said, we are going to be talking top five CM Punk moments of his career. This is just a purely preference-guided topic. It's unbelievably whatever is your cup of tea. I went with what I thought were great moments of his career and came up with three pages worth of stuff. So it's really just going to be whatever we feel was great for CM Punk and for his character, for his career, what was great television, what entertained us. And dear God, we hope this is not the end of CM Punk. We're not trying to do a career retrospective. We're not trying to say that he's going to be gone and he's done. We're just hoping that this is a great wrestler who deserves to have his accomplishments and his great moments talked about. And this seems like a good time of any. If nothing else, looking through my list, I could absolutely see this as being a midway point of a career, if not three-fourths of the way through a career. So, I was happy with the idea of being able to actually get all of these out there and see how much this man has contributed in the short time he's been with the WWE, as well as working in the independent circuits and ROH and brief stint in TNA, which I don't have anything on my list from TNA. I'm sorry, TNA, but that was not going to happen. Before we get into any of the CM Punks in our top five, were we on last week? No, we weren't on last week. So we have a couple things to catch up on here as far as a newsworthy topics and not just newsworthy topics, but we also have Elimination Chamber coming on. I know that we have another top five that's going to be happening in between Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania, where it looks like we'll be having former WWE writer Andrew Goldstein come on and talk with us about that top five, which will be WrestleMania-related, but also writer and creative-related, so that's why we're trying to tie it all in together. So it's going to be a fun time from now until WrestleMania, and with the network launch and everything seeming to be up in the air, the world of wrestling is kind of going haywire right now as far as what is their main topics, where they're going, what the future holds, and what is going to be happening coming up in the next 1 and 2 months. I'm going to throw it to you first, Justin, because I listened to our show where I had a pre-recorded segment, really, of the main stories and I talked a little bit about TNA, how my Rumble review, my Royal Rumble review, how you disagreed with me about fans hijacking the Rumble part of it, whereas I wanted to see the actual Rumble. I didn't want to hear the crowd chant, "We want Divas." That just seemed wrong to me, and you had a different opinion. It's perfectly fine. I did honestly want to talk to you a little bit about TNA and about the signing and whether it be handshake agreement, as he's talked about, or a 6-month deal, a year deal, authority deal, worker deal. It's obviously a worker deal because I believe he works the tapings tonight. But the signing of former WWE star MVP and him coming into the organization as not just a wrestler and not just somebody that is like a Kurt Angle or a Jeff Hardy or somebody like that, but actual authority figure that rivaled Dixie Carter. They didn't do the Hulk Hogan thing where they brought in somebody and they had the whole big press announcement and they automatically made everybody best friends and everybody just basically crapped all over it. They went the storyline route, which is what they should have done, and they also went with a guy who I believe at this stage in his career is more charismatic, considering Hulk Hogan right now, it does Hulk Hogan, and in Hulk Hogan and in TNA, it's not inspired and it's not fun to watch. MVP, on the other hand, right now has been pretty damn good and pretty watchable on TNA, and I'm just fortunate enough that I took over doing the 10 thoughts on TNA just 2 weeks ago, right before his debut. I don't know, just have you been keeping up with this? Have you seen anything he's done, and what was your gut reaction when you heard about who the new investor was going to be? Because I know you covered TNA before I took it over.
I've been trying to keep up. I did watch last Thursday's Impact. I've been trying to keep up with it as much as I can. First of all, as far as signing MVP, I think it is a smart signing. It's not one of those, you said, Hulk Hogan signings where they have to go out there and overpay for him just to get him to come into TNA. I'm sure, whatever MVP is making is reasonable enough money where they probably didn't overpay him. I mean, I'm sure he's probably one of their higher paid stars now, but again, he's a name. He's somebody out there that you know who he is. I always thought MVP was a good worker in WWE. I was ashamed that he had to leave somewhat early in his WWE career. He didn't really have that long of a career. As far as the investor storyline goes, for now it's good. The only thing you have to worry about is how long it can play out. I mean, we've seen authority figure storylines done time and time again where they just go on for too long and too long and eventually just get stale and old. I mean, TNA kind of has a smaller roster, so it's something you have to be careful with so things don't keep getting repetitive. But, I think for now it works. I think eventually they're going to have to get to the point where, they just have one person in charge of TNA, whether it's just Dixie Carter or just MVP. I'm assuming at some point MVP is going to get in the ring and wrestle, maybe at Lockdown at their next pay-per-view, have some kind of match. But I think somewhere down the line, there's going to have to be some kind of, MVP versus Dixie team or something like that, or a best of something series where they each pick their own wrestlers and have control of the company, and then it goes from there. I mean, as long as the Carter family owns TNA, I think Dixie Carter is going to be on TV. And, there's always been rumors here and there about TNA being for sale and how they were close to being sold to Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith, but that fell through because of Dixie Carter, if you believe that. Who knows what's going on? There's always rumors out there you hear now that Vince Russo may be coming back soon, which would just be the stupidest thing TNA could ever do possible. So, for now it's good. It's something different on TNA, seeing a guy that's like an MVP-like guy coming in and getting top billing right away. The Wolves are in there now, too. I think they kind of make good sidekicks for him as the guys that, these are the guys I want to build my company around if I have control of this. So for now, it's good. It's better than how they're treating their world champion, Magnus, right now. But So like I said, for now, the MVP Dixie Cutter stuff is good. My just concern is that it goes on too long and then fans get worn down by it. But, you know, for now, we'll see where it goes. But I definitely give them thumbs up for bringing in the MVP and how it was handled so far.
Yeah, I was interested. I thought, like, when I was reviewing his debut, the one word I could just I was able to use for his debut was just cool. I mean, he came out with the Wolves and was just basically stood there, and Scotland knew who the hell he was and knew it was a good signing, and it should make for some good television. I did not expect, and this is just from this last week's Impact, I did not expect the back and forth that he and Dixie would have. Dixie, since her heel turn, has been playing Stephanie McMahon light. She's been very, I own the company, I can do whatever I want, I know you all love me, even if you say you hate me, I know you love me because I give you what you want, and I give you what I know you want, even if you don't see it. Now she's starting to develop actually into her own little character, and I don't like seeing her on television. She can't hold a candle to anybody else that probably does this for a living, and have a back and forth with MVP, especially on a live mic in the ring. I think that showed really how glaringly different these two are as far as talent level. But it was better than I expected. I expected a flat-out train wreck, and they were able to get through it. They were able to establish MVP's the good guy authority figure. Dixie's the bad guy authority figure. I like that they're going with the MVP idea of talent comes first. They're the ones that should be the main focus of the company. Or compared to Dixie, where her little entourage thing that are the main focus of the company, which I guess, and like you said before, you expect them to have a match or you expect them to have whatever. I guess I believe she faced Rockstar Spud tonight on because they've taped all the way to lockdown, I believe, in Scotland or in the UK at least. I believe he faced with Rockstar Spud in just a squash match, and then they announced the lockdown is Team MVP versus Team Dixie, and MVP is actually in the match. So they are bringing him in as a talent as well as an authority figure. And I wrote about it when he was first coming in, was that this is a guy who in WWE wasn't able to really show what he can do as when it came to performing inside the ring. You could tell he had charisma just oozing out of him, and he had the ring presence, and he had the crowd if he wanted it. But when it came to actually being in the ring and the WWE style, it was a little bit harder to adapt for him for some reason. And then you see him go over to Japan, and being able to work a stiffer style or go to the indie, he was wrestling on indie shows, working stiffer styles. And he can go in that ring. And for a guy of his age and what he's been through in his life, for him to be able to work that type of style that earns the respect of the boys and earns the respect of people who have paid their dues and been in the business for 15, 20 years, that's really saying something. So we have yet to see on American television what this man can do in the ring. And I'm excited to see just what they have planned for him, what they have planned as far as being the investor on the mic, because you know he's going to be able to pull that off. But also what they're going to stick him in. Are they going to do kind of like a Sting thing where he comes in and, oh, yeah, he's able to just do the investor type thing. He'll wrestle a little bit. then the investor thing will start to fade away because they don't want to really overrule Dixie, and then it'll fade away farther. And then all of a sudden he's just a performer, and then next thing you know, he's the new Mr. Anderson, and he's just upper mid-card in a horrible feud and can't get out of there to save his life. So I'm optimistic, but I'm also not jaded. I know what TNA has done. I know what they like to do. I know what their history is and what their track record is blatantly out there for guys of his level. So I'm optimistic, but I'm still reserved about it. Either way, it should be interesting. Like you said, for us, the Wolves, they're going to be a fantastic addition to the tag team division. I think they're going to bring in some newer guys, and it seems like TNA is following a new initiative, kind of territory style, where they can get rid of some of the higher paid talent and bring in these newer guys who are making names on the independent scene. Bring them in straight away, put them in programs, and be fine with it. They're bringing back Kenny King finally. They have the Wolves coming in. They have another new tag team coming in, and I forget who it was. They're really really trying to freshen up things there, and that's always a good thing. WWE is doing it with their part timers, or TNA is doing it with the lower paid guys, and I think that's the right way to go. Before we go any further, and before we talk about a little bit about Raw and Elimination Chamber and build up and things like that, I want to give out our phone number because it's only Justin and I tonight, and we have a top five going for CM Punk moment. There's got to be people out there listening, people wanting to call in, give their opinion. Even if before we even get to our top five, if you want to talk about Raw, SmackDown, TNA, ROH, PWD, Copacabana, I don't know, whoever the hell you want to talk about, just give us a call at 818-532-9786. Again, that's 818-532-9786. We'll see you on hold. I'll buzz you in when you come in, and just ask the question. Get the ball rolling. If you have something on your mind you want to vent on, go for it. If you go too long, I'll cut you off. But for the most part, I'll let you keep going. And I want this interaction with our fans. I know you guys are out there listening. Hopefully we can get you in on the show and get you more involved. And hopefully we get a nice back and forth with our topic for this week. Before that, let's go straight into Raw. SmackDown spoilers came out, but there wasn't really anything spectacular except for Cesaro, which I'm going to already put it out there. I wrote it on Monday that he's going to be the show stealer of Elimination Chamber. But he was probably the biggest story coming out of SmackDown, but if people don't want to know about that, okay, we won't talk about it. We're focusing on Raw and Elimination Chamber and network launching. Let's go right into Raw and right into biggest news coming, or not coming out of Raw, but the biggest news surrounding WWE is the walkout of CM Punk. It's what spurred this top five. It's what's making the wrestling world tick right now. And each day, it seems like it's becoming less and less and less of a story. Now, if I'm CM Punk, I'm pissed because I'd be like, shit. I wanted to leverage this into something great. Whereas if it's CM Punk and if it's the same guy that I'm thinking is the same guy who walked out, he's probably like, oh, thank God they stopped talking about me. Maybe I can actually leave my house now and go out and do something. So this is it's weird. Granted, in March they're going to Chicago, where they're not going to be able to get away with drowning out CM Punk chant. But every town they've been to since he's walked out, the CM Punk chants start and then fade away very, very quickly. The first time it went on, they talked over it. It worked. The second time they did it, they brought out Daniel Bryan, and the audience focus immediately turned to Daniel Bryan, and he was the one that they were on for the rest of the show. So the WWE is handling this in the best way they possibly can by putting the focus on the guys who are there rather than the guy that's not there. But I'm shocked that this story and this guy who is unbelievably popular was only number two as far as merchandise selling and in the WWE. He's probably still number two as far as merchandise selling, and was the number two guy as far as advertising goes. People are beginning to just kind of like, okay, well, he's gone. Maybe he'll come back. Maybe he won't come back. But for right now, there's other stuff going on, so let's talk about that. I never expected that. I thought this was going to drag on until he finally got back to the ring, and they completely pretty much wiped it off of the board and just by ignoring it. And that, I mean, it's smart in one way, but another way, like, who the hell would have thought that would work? I don't know, Justin, did you expect this to really happen so, not only so quickly that it faded out, but it was abrupt and it just, I mean, we heard the audio leak of the announcers like, oh, here we go, the CM Punk chant. And then it lasted for all of, I think, like, they chanted it for 5 times. And then it just stopped. And you hear JBL say, hey, it never really lasts very quickly, huh? And it's true. And it happened a lot. So is this going to continue? Or is something going to happen where it picks back up again? Or are people just going to try to focus on what and who is there compared to who's not there and who they shouldn't be putting their focus on?
Though I am kind of surprised that it died out as quickly as it did. And, you know, part of me wonders sometimes, too. I mean, I don't know what they do during a live broadcast, and maybe they kind of drown them out with other things from time to time. So that's also possible. I also kind of wonder, too, if as the situation is kind of, you know, going on and kind of played out while you hear, but nobody really obviously still knows the whole 100% true story to it. Part of me also wonders if some of the fans just aren't starting to think, you know, this guy just, I mean, we liked this guy, CM Punk. We cheered him every single time he came out here, and he just left us. And it makes me wonder if some fans also aren't starting to get some kind of backlash towards Punk for walking out on the company. I mean, when this first came out, everybody was all supportive of Punk, saying, you know, he was, you know, he stood up to them. He didn't take any of their crap. But part of me thinks that maybe over time, as people thought about maybe more and more about it, they just started thinking, you know, he left us. He was one of our favorite guys to watch out there perform, and he just kind of, you know, sure, if you want to say he turned his back on creative and the higher-ups in WWE, but you can't also deny that he didn't kind of turn his back on the fans by not coming out there and just kind of walking out in the middle of the most important time of the wrestling season. So some of me doesn't maybe think that maybe some fans are starting to feel that way. I think you might see a little bit more CM Punk chants after that. You mentioned the that live broadcast leak with the announcers making fun of the crowd for chanting that. So maybe you might see him pick up a little bit more this week. And then obviously once it gets to Chicago in a couple of weeks, that'll pick up full steam. But, you know, I kind of think that maybe, like I said, I think maybe fans are starting to get a little bit of a backlash towards Punk. I mean, we've seen things come out like that letter from an anonymous WWE employee bashing Punk for saying how he always wanted to be the top face of the company but wouldn't want to do all the stuff CM does, which is probably true. CM Punk probably wouldn't want to be going to Raw, to SmackDown, to Regis and Kelly, or to Michael and Kelly now, whatever it is, to do a Make-A-Wish, to go do a media appearance somewhere else. You know, if you want to be a top face of the company, you got to do everything Cena does. And that's why, as much as I don't like the character John Cena, the man John Cena has 100% of my respect for everything he does in this company. But so that's maybe what I'm starting to think is there might be a little bit more backlash from the fans towards Punk than there was when this story first broke out.
Yeah, it's a hard one to really pinpoint of what fans are feeling, because it is, I mentioned before, I was there when Steve Austin, quote, took his ball and went home, when he didn't want to lose to Brock Lesnar on free television in a King of the Ring qualifying match. And he's talked about that story recently, but he has also talked about that story a while ago and said that he was wrong. He handled the situation in a bad way, but he's like, I still don't agree with what they wanted me to do, but I should have handled it differently compared to Punk, who a lot of people know is, I wouldn't say volatile, but strong-minded enough to do something like this instantly. I was not surprised at all when I heard that he walked out before Raw. It was wrong. He should have done it. If you're getting paid by your employer to do a job and do whatever it is, and you're asked to go out there and cut a promo or whatever it is, you kind of got to go out there and do it. I mean, that's the whole point of it. But, and he's the type of guy who, yeah, he probably has been voicing his frustrations and voicing everything that's been bugging him in the past couple months. And this was just the straw that broke the camel's back. And instead of speaking up publicly or speaking up in front of the locker room and giving anyone a reason as to why he was leaving, because no reason has leaked out as far as official reason. There's not been one common theory that's come out. It's been creative differences. It's been he's hurt, he's tired. It's been he didn't like how Daniel Bryan was booked. It's been a lot of different things. So obviously he hasn't spoken with anybody on the roster who's willing to put it out there why he actually left. So if he didn't have, I don't want to say the guts, but he didn't have the respect to tell the locker room, hey, I'm leaving, I'm walking out right now, I don't feel like I'm being treated well, none of my questions are getting answered. We found out on the Comic-Con he had on Saturday before that Raw that he had a couple questions that he wasn't getting answered from the WWE brass, which I fully understand why you would want to know the answers to some of these questions. Like, how do the superstars get paid now that all the pay-per-views are on the WWE Network when originally they were worked into the percentages of the pay-per-view buys? It's a big question and a big part of your paycheck, especially when WrestleMania is the first pay-per-view that you're going to be seeing on that check. If he's not getting those answers, those are all legitimate reasons as to why he could walk out, but he never said anything to somebody who wasn't Vince McMahon or Triple H or Stephanie McMahon or whoever he spoke to. He never addressed the locker room or addressed anybody else. He just left. And I think that's a big problem with the guys in the locker room, because they feel like they deserve an answer of why this is happening, because now everybody's scrambling to figure out what to do next. And I, like you said, he didn't want all the extra stuff when it comes to being the top babyface of the company. He doesn't want to do the PR, which I laughed hysterically when Randy Orton said that he wants to do Kelly and Michael. He wants to do the radio interviews and TV appearances, which on his damn DVD, he said that's the worst part of his job. But him just saying that was almost kind of a shot in the face of CM Punk, because Punk doesn't want to do that stuff. He's never wanted to do that stuff, and that's another reason why he's always wanted to play heel. He doesn't have to do that if he's the heel champion. He gets to wrestle almost anybody in the company. Anybody could be a babyface if they put him up against a good heel. And he doesn't have to go around and kill himself with media interviews constantly. So I can see why he didn't want to do that and why he's now a babyface, but yet he still wants to headline WrestleMania, but he doesn't want to deal with all the crap and everything surrounding it. But he never conveyed this to people. And I think that's what's rubbing people the wrong way. And it's starting, like I said, there's been two anonymous letters that have come out already. Like, God knows how many there are going to be if this continues to be a running topic. But let me throw this out there again, our phone number, in case you want to call in and talk to us about what your opinion of CM Punk leaving WWE is, or if you expect him to be back next week, you expect him to be back before Mania, whatever you think. Our phone number here is 818-532-9786. Once again, this is the HTC Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. I am Matt Herrick. I am on with Justin Sirwanka. We're going to get to our top five. I want to talk about Elimination Chamber really quickly. I know we're not doing our preview yet, but I want to talk about all this stuff that now is being tossed into the air. And I want to hear Elimination Chamber plays into this. What are you seeing right now as being the top three main events at WrestleMania? Because scarily enough, the main events that I had picked out for WrestleMania seem to be coming true, and I don't know how they got there, but it's working out into that favor, and I'm happy with it. But I'm surprised that's going that route, and I just want to hear who you have in those top spots going into WrestleMania 30, and obviously this stuff has changed since CM Punk has left, but how drastically or who do you have going in on those top three marquee matches?
Well, first off, as a quick show, if you're listening out there on htcwrestling.com, I had a little tease out there this past weekend where I went back in time and fixed the WrestleMania 30 card, which is how I would have done it if I was booking back from Survivor Series. So there's that little show right there. So if you want to do that right now, or after the show, you can go look at that. As far as what's playing out now in real life, I think looking at it, I don't even know if the WWE knows what they're doing at this point. I would say I want to say there are two matches that I would consider locks at this point. I think it's going to be The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. I think that match looks like it's happening no matter what. Brock Lesnar really hasn't been on TV. He hasn't been on TV the last 2 weeks. And The Undertaker obviously is going to make his comeback, I think, the night after the Elimination Chamber with the debut of the network coming. I think that match is happening. I've said before on the show that I'm not a fan of that match, basically because this isn't 10 years ago when The Undertaker still wrestled full-time. You have The Undertaker coming back to wrestle Brock Lesnar, a guy who's pretty much just there to get a paycheck. He's probably not going to want to put in any extra work to make the match perfect, and there's a very good chance he could injure The Undertaker to the point where he may not come back for next year's WrestleMania. So there's that. I would still say John Cena, Bray Wyatt seems like it's penciled in. For the simple fact of, if you from Raw this past Monday, when Bray Wyatt cut his promo after the match on the Shield, he talked about taking care of the Shield before he moved on to his, I don't remember the exact word he used, it was like next project or something, or next game, and I thought that pretty much played into John Cena, even though they haven't really addressed that at all since the night after the Royal Rumble, where the Wyatts interfered and cost Cena the match. So I think that match is happening. And as much as I think they don't want to do it, I just think that they've booked themselves into a corner with Batista and Randy Orton. I mean, I know they've talked about adding Daniel Bryan into the WWE title match. I know I've read things that Randy Orton's also unhappy backstage, and he's voiced his displeasures about the way he's been booked, and they might take the title off him at Elimination Chamber. I don't see that happening. I think you're going to see Randy Orton Batista happen. I think the only way Daniel Bryan gets added to the match, and I think this match happens too, that they do Daniel Bryan and Triple H, and if Daniel Bryan beats Triple H earlier in the night, he gets added to the WWE title match later. I think that's the only way Daniel Bryan gets added to the WWE title match. I don't think he's going to win the title at the Elimination Chamber, at least right now. Something could change in the next week booking-wise that may make me think otherwise. But I don't think that's going to happen. So I think you're looking at, I know you said three, but essentially these are the top four matches. I think it's going to be what's been reported the whole time. Orton, Batista, Bryan, Triple H, Cena, Bray Wyatt, and Undertaker, Brock Lesnar. And I think it's just a shame when you look back earlier, you know, 2013, where we all thought this WrestleMania, the potential to be so good, and then they threw out these matches that I just don't think, outside of really John Cena, Bray Wyatt, I mean, even Daniel Bryan and Triple H, which what could have been built so well if they had just stuck with the story about maybe giving Bryan the WWE title and having Triple H being hell-bent to get the title off of him, if they would have stuck to a story like that instead of booking Bryan the way he did, that match would have had way more heat to it now than it's going to now with the way it's booked. So those are the matches that I'm guessing is going to happen. I don't think, despite all the talk about them possibly changing plans, I don't think that's going to end up happening. I think they're just going to stick with their guns and hope to God everything plays out for the best.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're in full force panic. We've got to make these fans want to buy this show. They are, I think, in two minds right now, and they're in two different positions. They are so lucky. They are PG era pooping out rainbows that the first pay-per-view for the network is going to be WrestleMania 30. Because there's a lot of people that are going to be buying the network just to buy the network, and they're going to get WrestleMania 30. So that's going to factor into they're going to push that up as far as, oh yeah, this all contributed to it, and people wanted to see WrestleMania. And they were able to get all this other stuff with it as well. And WrestleMania was a huge part of that. Even if it sucks, that's what they're going to go with. And on the other side of it, I think everything they had planned out, with maybe the exception of Undertaker Brock Lesnar, is up in the air. I think the reason why Undertaker Brock Lesnar isn't up in the air is because we haven't seen them on television together yet. I think if we had seen them on television together, we might be talking a little bit of a different story and them considering a different opponent for the Undertaker. I don't know if crowds are going to give the WWE the reaction they expect from their first stare down or whatever they're going to have happen. If they have it come out where Brock Lesnar comes out and just utterly destroys The Undertaker when Undertaker makes his first appearance, that might get them some pretty good heat to it, and maybe it'll work. Who knows? It's way, way, way too early to call this, but I really like the idea of pitting Roman Reigns versus The Undertaker. I think they could play up the idea of The Shield putting out The Undertaker for this long, even though he does go away every single year. They could put out the idea that The Shield took him out, have Taker plow through Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, and then maybe before WrestleMania have Reigns get a clean pin on Taker and go into WrestleMania with having him have a clean pin over him and not get the clean pin at WrestleMania, but maybe get definitely get a nice rub and get a giant spotlight thrown on him being in a match against The Undertaker. I don't think that's going to happen. It's feasible. It's definitely a possibility. there's the backstory to do it. If they're too scared with the idea of putting Brock Lesnar in the ring with The Undertaker, which I would understand in an instant, and I wouldn't want to put Undertaker in there either. But if they wanted to go with somebody else, and they wanted to go with any up and comer, I would definitely go with Roman Reigns, and I think he's going to be the guy for a while. But yeah, besides that, I'm going to be pretty much the sure bet is Brock Lesnar, Undertaker. I think John Cena, Bray Wyatt is going to happen, and they've shown it too much. They teased it too much for it not to happen at this point. It'll be a great rub for Bray Wyatt, which I think he deserves. He's put a lot of work into that character. He's put a lot of work into getting his in-ring style and his just, I don't want to say his physical shape into WWE standards, because that's obviously not true, but he's in better shape than he was when he was Husky. So Bray Wyatt has done what the WWE has asked him to do, and they, as in the Wyatt family, are over. They really, really captivate people's attention. And you saw that just by the Shield and Wyatt standoff this past week on Raw. That's not just the Shield. People are starting to get a little bored with the Shield. That's why you're starting to see the cracks and tensions between the two, or between the three of them. So a lot of that was the Wyatt family, and a lot of, I'd say, probably 80 to 90% of that is Bray Wyatt. And him versus John Cena, I think, is a good match. I think it'll be an interesting match, if nothing else, because they'll be able to tell a really interesting story. And it's one I would be looking forward to. And then the main event is what I've been saying since, I think, before WrestleMania. I think they're going to go the Rey Mysterio route and get Daniel Bryan in there with a triple threat match for the WWE title. Batista and Orton aren't clicking. It's obvious they aren't clicking. I loved it on Raw where it was Orton cutting a promo, Batista's music hits, and the crowd goes nuts because they're in L.A. and say, hey, it's one of the big stars that we know. And then it's like his music stops and people are, I'm sorry, this was towards Alberto Del Rio. His music stopped. And people, it was like a light bulb went off, wait, no, he won the Royal Rumble, and we wanted Daniel Bryan to win it. So we want to boo him. We don't like him anymore. No, this is bad. And all of a sudden, you started to hear boos that were not there during his entrance. And then he hits a Batista bomb through the table, lays Del Rio out, is posing and everything, and the place is going nuts for him again. So it was a very fickle L.A. crowd of going back and forth on whether or not they want to cheer Batista. And that had nothing to do with Randy Orton. That's just one competitor who should, by all intents and purposes, be cheered without a doubt. He should have walked right back into the company, been a big enough star that people went nuts to see him live, to pay for his pay-per-views, to buy his merchandise, to do whatever they needed to do, because this was a gigantic star for them that left right when he was getting hot. And it's not happening because Daniel Bryan is overruling everything that is happening on these shows right now. It's ridiculous. I've never seen a situation like this where a guy who is not positioned to be the top guy is being treated like a top guy by the audience and not management. It's absolutely ridiculous that he's not even being, well, from our side, he's not being considered as a viable threat for the title or anything of that nature. But this man has something that a lot of people don't have, and that's the fan support, and it's the WWE fan support. A support that has been so lethargic and blasé towards the product for the last couple years that now that they're excited about something, I mean, Summer of Punk was big, but they capitalized on it. Right now, you have Daniel Bryan, and they're doing nothing. They have to go with the triple threat at WrestleMania. I don't think they'll take the title off of Randy Orton at Elimination Chamber. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think they will. I don't see Daniel Bryan going into a WrestleMania as the WWE champion. I see Daniel Bryan having the boyhood dream come true in the Shawn Michaels situation and him winning the title at WrestleMania. That's the only way I see him winning the WWE championship in the near future. And to do it at WrestleMania 30 against Randy Orton and against Batista, he's the type of man who can make that match interesting. And I understand the booking mentality of why they want to put him in a triple threat match and not just him against Randy Orton. They did the exact same thing with Rey Mysterio, except Rey won the Rumble and then had to go through and lose his title shot to Randy Orton at the next pay-per-view and then go on and whatever. I think Teddy Long put him back into the match. So it was Kurt Angle versus Randy Orton versus Rey Mysterio for the championship at WrestleMania 22. But it was a similar thing where it was, can this guy really carry a championship, and can he really be counted on as being the man of our WWE roster? And I think it's to the point where not only is he a huge, huge star in the WWE, he's a reality star now. There are people watching that show that never, ever watch wrestling, but are somehow tuning in on Monday nights now and notice Daniel Bryan. They'll notice Jimmy and Jey Uso. Listen to the pops they're getting when they come out. That is what's happening. This guy is crossing over in a way that was completely unexpected and probably not a way he wanted to. I'm sure he wasn't too happy with the fact that he was going to be on a reality show, but it's working, and it's making him even more popular than he already was. And that is, I mean, he's celebrating with the Super Bowl champions. That's insane. I mean, this is a guy who's not a champion. He's not in the main event program. He's not involved with anything right now except for being one of six people in a match at a B-level pay-per-view. And they have him going on the NFL Network and doing the yes chant with the Seattle Seahawks. It's crazy. That doesn't happen. And there's lightning in this bottle that WWE isn't capitalizing on. I'm waiting for it to happen. I think it's going to be a triple threat match at WrestleMania. I don't see how they can get away with not having a triple threat match at WrestleMania. But I don't know. And that's just me. And as far as Triple H goes, I don't need to see him wrestle again. I don't need to see him thrown into a match against whomever. It doesn't sell WrestleMania tickets. It just doesn't. Last year, if you thought it sold any tickets, what sold those tickets were Shawn Michaels and Paul Heyman and somewhat of Brock Lesnar. It wasn't Triple H, I'm sorry. It wasn't. So to have him just cut out of a program and not have a match at WrestleMania, I'm fine with that. Just keep him on. I focus on these two guys. Focus on the fact that you have a Roman Reigns or you have a Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins that can have a fantastic matchup together. put it out there that these guys are young, they're good, they've been paying their dues on the road for well over a year, they know what they're doing, they can handle this spot. You don't need a part-timer in every single main event. And if that happens, it's harsh. It kind of talks down to your roster as far as executives don't really see them as being real money draws. And is that even a consideration anymore? Do you really need to be a money draw for a pay-per-view if people are just going to be watching it on the WWE Network? So you can take risks. You can't throw stuff out there. I kind of wish that the network was launching before Elimination Chamber, because I think you'd see more risks and more people thrown out there and see if it was a swing and a miss or something actually connected with the crowd. Who knows? I don't know. That's my take on the whole Daniel Bryan situation. It seems too good to be true that he's getting over as well as he's getting over, and it seems like awful business that he's not being put into the place that he should be put into. But our show is not about Daniel Bryan, virtually. We're not doing our top five Daniel Bryan moments. I probably could come up with five, but I would have to take a little bit longer research for that one. No, our topic tonight is our top five CM Punk moments. It's not his career retrospective. It's top five CM Punk moments of his career thus far. We want him back. I'm trusting Justin feels the same way I do.
Yes, I do.
Okay. I want to make that clear. So this is something that I came up with it as soon as the walkout happened. This guy's had a fantastic career, not only in WWE, and it is a nice time where nothing is going on for him right now, where we can take a look back at his career, see all the things that he has accomplished already. And just making out the list for myself, it sets off the light bulb of like, yeah, he can retire and be perfectly happy with everything he did. It's kind of like how Edge was forced to retire, but then you look at it and you look at his title history and you look at what he's done in the business, and he won every single honor you could win as a WWE superstar. Everything. From the Elimination Chamber to the Royal Rumble to the King of the Ring to the only thing he didn't win was the Brawl for All. I think that's the only thing he didn't win. That would have been awesome. You go back and you look at CM Punk's career and you look at his time in WWE, and there's a lot that he's done already that if he retired tomorrow or decided he just wanted it to be part-time and only have attraction matches and kind of do a Brock Lesnar or Rock schedule, I could see him doing that and never wanting to be WWE champion again or never wanting to be world champion or anything like that, and just kind of having that Shawn Michaels mentality of, I want to go out there and have fun. And I want to go out there and do something I love. And that's because I've done everything that would mean something to fans. And it really is just fans. And even though he is a wrestling fan, I doubt that he was super pumped when he won the IC title for the second or third time. I think after one, it's like, oh, this is the title Macho Man held. I mean, this is fantastic. But once you start racking them up, it's kind of like, okay, these are just belts, whereas other fans are kind of like, oh, my God, he's a five-time IC champion, which he's not. I don't think he is, but besides the point, he's done a lot. I'll put it that way. And my throat is completely dry. I'm going to give out our phone number one more time, and I'm going to have Justin kick off our top five. Like I said, I have three pages of stuff to get to, so I'm going to go with my five around Justin, and we'll be able to definitely get 10 different ones out there plus honorable mentions. But our phone number, if you want to call in and give us one of your favorite CM Punk moments, or what you're looking forward to, or what you expect in the next coming month, our phone number here, if you want to call us and talk to us, is 818-532-9786. Again, this is the Inside Pulse, Hit in the Canvas, Wrestling Pulsecast. It's 818-532-9786. Okay, all that said, all that caught up, Justin, let's get into it. CM Punk's top five moments of his career thus far. What's your number five?
My number five, I am going to go with, I'm the same with you. I have about a list of like 20 to 25 things here that I could just pick. I don't think anybody can have any arguments about anything you put on here. I guess for my number five, I'm going to put a little match. I'm going to say, because the match I may be holding a little higher regardless of some other people. I know a lot of people do like it, but I'm going to go with the CM Punk versus Jeff Hardy tables, ladders, and chairs match from SummerSlam 2009. To me, that was just, I think they wrestled one other time after this pay-per-view when, and I think Jeff Hardy left the WWE after that. But for me, this match was just the culmination of the great summer feud that they had going back and forth from Punk cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase after he won it the second time on a Jeff Hardy who had just won the World Heavyweight Championship. I believe it was also in a ladder match against Edge at Extreme Rules. And from him being the title later, and then he just had a great series of pay-per-view matches that summer where, you know, Punk slowly started his heel turn with, you know, kind of faking an eye injury to get out of a match or to keep his title against Jeff Hardy, and then Hardy winning the title back, and then just had this, like, kind of the culmination of their feud where they just had a very intense and brutal ladder match. I just rewatched it, I think, I want to say about a month or two ago, and I was doing a column, and I watched it. And it was just a good match, and it was the match that gave them the main event of that show. I forget what match it was that was for the WWE title that year, but they let them main event that show. Obviously, The Undertaker came back at the end, and that kick-started CM Punk's next feud. But to me, that match was just the perfect way to culminate everything that had been going on during that summer between Punk and Hardy. And like I said, they wrestled one other time after that, but, you know, this is pretty much what everybody remembers as the final match between these two and leading up to and leading after their whole summer-long battles that they had going back and forth, and which started CM Punk's heel turn, which was, again, a great thing for CM Punk and everything he did after that. So my number five is the CM Punk-Jeff Hardy culmination match at SummerSlam for the TLC match for the World Heavyweight title.
Yeah, I had something similar to that. I didn't have the match itself. What I had was CM Punk ending Jeff Hardy's WWE run at the height of Jeff Hardy's popularity, making Punk SmackDown's number one villain. This really did catapult him right up there. Everybody that was on SmackDown, and granted, SmackDown was depleted at the time, but Jeff Hardy was at the height of his career. Obviously, a couple weeks later, it came out that he was in some serious doo-doo and was not looking forward to a knock on the door from somebody with a badge. But he also was the world champion. He was turning in some of the best character work of his career, not just in ring work, but just some of his promos, his ring presence, the popularity, and the overall Jeff Hardy character had started clicking on all cylinders, and all of a sudden he decided he wasn't going to do it anymore. And CM Punk was the man who was able to say that I ended his career, or I ended his WWE run. And that ladder match, and then the following steel cage match where it was loser leaves SmackDown or something like that, those two matches really solidified Punk in his first heel run in the WWE. And if you ever followed CM Punk on the independent scene, you were just begging and itching for a heel run for Punk. And he latched on to this one, came out the following week on SmackDown, dressed up as Jeff Hardy, got the entire arena to mark out before the lights came on to reveal that it was CM Punk mocking him. It was an amazing time for him, and really, I think, established him up into that main event level, even though I think, even though that was his second cash-in, his first one was on Edge, but it was the second time he cashed in Money in the Bank, and yet the first time he was really considered a main event player, and I can absolutely see that as being a solid, solid number five. Going into, I guess, my number five, I'll stick with what I have, and it's from Survivor Series 2006, and some people might not remember this, but it was actually Team DX versus Team Rated RKO, and it was during the time of the true brand split, and all of the elimination matches had to have a team that featured people from Raw, people from SmackDown, and people from ECW. So CM Punk got lumped into this matchup as the token ECW guy. It was Shawn Michaels and Triple H as DX, and Matt and Jeff Hardy as the Hardys. I believe Jeff was the IC champion at the time. And then CM Punk, this new guy from ECW, this scrawny little kid that's just hanging out with the big boys. And he stole the arena from his entire team. You had, obviously, he was the last one out. DX was the last one out. DX, the whole intro and everything else. And the music ended. Triple H grabs the mic to go in to start doing the shtick. And a giant CM Punk chant breaks out. I mean, to the point where, like, the camera focused on him, and he's looking at somebody, and he goes, "Hey, that's me." And you're looking at the other four guys, or the other four baby faces in the ring, and they're chanting for CM Punk, a guy who hadn't been on the roster a year. And Triple H went over to him and had him the honors of saying the "Are You Ready" part of the whole DX opening and their long-ass introduction before anything starts to happen. Total side note, and one of my favorite memories from any Survivor Series whatsoever was that bell rang, Sean super kicked Mike Knox and pinned him, and then asked if he was in the match and who he was. And Triple H is like, "That's Mike Knox." And Sean's like, "Oh, so that was good. We're doing good then. Okay, cool." And they just went on with the match. I mean, that was something so simple. Yes, people could say it buried Mike Knox a little bit. I thought it was a fun tongue-in-cheek type thing. But anyway, that was completely off topic. But for CM Punk to and going back to the word that's going around constantly now, he hijacked his own team. Like, that crowd hijacked Team DX and basically made it Team CM Punk. Anytime he was in the ring, the place went nuts. And they didn't have to worry about him being eliminated because the team did a full sweep of Rated RKO. So they didn't have to worry about when CM Punk was going to be eliminated, because he kind of figured he would be the first one gone considering the talent in the ring. And he was there holding his own and even a bit higher than the other four guys on his team. I think that really opened a lot of eyes, not only as a fan, but a lot of eyes in the company that, hey, maybe this guy does have that intangible it factor that we've been looking for. And, yeah, he's skinny. He's got long hair, and he's got tattoos, and he does these weird kicks, and he does a weird wrist-rolling type thing. But somehow these people seem to like him, and I guess that's a good thing. Granted, And full disclosure, this pay-per-view was held in Pennsylvania. So it was former ECW territory, so he did kind of fit their mold. But this was not the ECW arena. This was a WWE-sized arena, and he had them in the palm of his hand. I don't know what you have to say about that one, Justin.
Well, that was actually what I was – it was either the one I read, the number five, or that one. So it's a good thing I chose the one that I did, since you were able to keep your number five. But I agree with everything that you said. Like you said, just seeing when you got – when you have Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Jeff Hardy, three guys who were over at the time, and then this newcomer CM Punk just take everything over in that match, or the beginning of the match at least. You know, as you said, it opened a bunch of eyes. And another side note from that match, I know you brought up Shawn Michaels on it. The other thing Shawn Michaels in that match I thought was kind of funny is at one point, him and John Morrison were in the ring together, and he's standing over the ropes, and Melina was out there, and Shawn Michaels just randomly hugged Melina, and she thought it was John Morrison. They both kind of freaked out when they realized that. I thought that was another funny side note from that match that I want to bring up since you brought up the first one. But, yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. Just seeing somebody who was relatively new to WWE at the time take over when you had established veterans in the ring was a sign of things to come for him, I guess.
Yeah, and you say that too, and it's funny because that's something that the old Shawn Michaels used to do all the time. You saw him do that with Sunny, any heel female manager he was able to pull that spot off with, and that was a nice touch that, yeah, it was like the old DX was back type of thing. But yeah, let's go on to year number four. So I can stop talking again.
Let's see, number four here. I am going to go with something actually we just talked about a few weeks ago from the Royal Rumble, where CM Punk kind of went on his little, he went in there, elimination, and where this is in the middle of his relative strength society, and just cut a promo after every single elimination. The strength society is something that, you know, it's happened a few years ago now, and sometimes, like, newer wrestling fans don't really know about it. But, you know, you could argue that that was the best work of his career with everything he did. You know, it started after the Jeff Hardy feud when he became fully heel, and he just, you know, played into his straight edge characters so much and became this almost, like, you know, cult preacher leader with Luke Gallows and Serena with them, and for a very brief time, Joey Mercury. But he did everything so well during that time period, and just like we said when we talked about it during our top five Royal Rumble moments, it was something that hadn't been done in Rumble before. And to give CM Punk the mic and just say, here you go, while you're waiting for guys to come out, cut a straight edge promo and talk about how you're better than everybody else is just so well done and perfect for a character like for Punk's character at the time, trying to get himself over as being this godly character and with nobody else in the ring and time to kill. Why not give him the mic and let him preach whatever he wants? And then, of course, you know, you just knew sooner or later, I think it was like three or four guys before some big star was going to come in and you know, go toe-to-toe with him. That ended up being, ironically, Triple H. But just that Royal Rumble match itself and letting Punk do his own thing, go off with the mic, cut a promo big match that never done before during the Rumble was just another good sign that they trusted Punk to do a lot with his straight edge character.
Yep, I had that as one of mine. I didn't have it as a number on one of my on my list, but it was definitely I kind of lumped it together with just the straight edge society gimmick. Granted, this was a different part of the Straight Edge Society. This wasn't just it didn't all just happen during the Rumble, but these spots in the Rumble and the way he did it and the way that he was able to work and cater his quote sermons to each specific guy that came to the ring, I thought it was able. He was able to show his versatility as far as a talker and as far as a guy who can be handed a mic and be trusted enough to do what's best and the most entertaining for the match. And I thought it was fantastic. It's still one of my favorite moments in Royal Rumble history and definitely worthy of a top five in his career, and especially since he was one of the first people to even attempt to try to do something like that in order to keep people's attention during the down times in the Royal Rumble, which tend to be more often than not lately. I'll go into my number four, which was actually your number five. Now that I look on it, not really your number five, but it was just CM Punk cashing in Jeff Hardy and turning heel for the first time. But I'm gonna throw that off to the side just because I don't want to repeat a topic that we've already talked about. And go into the other one that I had for her as almost like a backup was his first win as the Money in the Bank holder, where he won the championship from a beaten down Edge, which is kind of ironic because Edge had been beaten down by Batista, I believe, and he cashed in. So he cashed in the Money in the Bank on Edge and won the World Heavyweight Championship for the first time. But the thing that's kind of lost during it is that he never lost the championship. It went on for a couple months. He held it for a couple months, and then they had that weird pay-per-view. I believe it was an Unforgiven or something like that, where they had the championship scramble matches, and Orton punted him before the match, and Chris Jericho replaced him in the match. So he never lost his first World Heavyweight Championship. And it's a guy who nobody expected him to win the World Heavyweight Championship to begin with. And then to say that, yeah, he cashed it in successfully. He did it opportunistically. But he also never lost it as well. Like he was written out of the stories, so he did it. He wasn't the champion anymore, but he was never pinned. He never submitted, nothing like that. And then he went on to the next WrestleMania, won the Money in the Bank again. It went on to cash it in against Jeff Hardy and get into everything that we talked about earlier. So I think that was an interesting moment of his career where the WWE seemed a little too unsure about having him lose it straight up. So they found a way to work around it. And I know part of that was they wanted to put the belt on Jericho because his feud with Shawn Michaels was absolutely magic at that point, and they wanted to have a title match for it. But they could have gone about it a lot of different ways with putting Jericho in this scramble match for some reason, or have him beat Punk clean at a different time. And instead, they just kept Punk strong and wrote him off the TV for a little bit and wrote him away from the World Heavyweight Championship. I thought that did a lot for a guy that was his age and his first World Championship title run. Granted, after that, he reverted to a tag team with Kofi Kingston, and there's a lot of filler there until he won the Money in the Bank again. But at that time, it seemed like they were protecting him for something bigger, and I thought that was pretty telling as far as where his career was going to be going.
That was, again, obviously something that I had on my list. I completely had forgotten, it blanked my mind that he didn't even lose the title until you just reminded me about that right there. I think that, you know, when you look back on it, it's one of those things, like you said, they kind of, you know, protected him and they wanted to get the world title. I completely understand why they would have wanted to make that Jericho-Michaels feud for a championship. That was easily, unless I'm missing something, probably the best feud of that year between those two, and the two matches they ended up having later in that year were very good. You know, you just wish, like you said, I kind of would have liked to see him either lose the title clearly or come back and after Jericho was done with his feud with Michaels, come back and try to reclaim the title. And instead, if I'm remembering the chain of events correctly, I think Jericho held on to the title and then lost it to a returning John Cena later in that year. So, you know, it was definitely a good moment. I think it was the first Money in the Bank cash-in done on Raw, if I'm remembering it correctly. I can't kind of piece through my head real quick with these other Money in the Bank cash-in cabin, but I think that was the first one done on Raw, so it's kind of a big deal moment. It happened in the beginning of the show, which was, you know, it made the rest of the show tune in and exciting. You know, as much as it was nice to see him win, they kind of, you know, I don't want to say they completely put faith in him during that first run, because when you look back, I mean, he wasn't really the focal point of any show. Even when he was world champ on Raw, they were always thought that was the SummerSlam where it was John Cena, Batista, and on SmackDown you had Edge and Undertaker fighting both for non-titles. So it was a cool moment in and of itself, seeing him cash in and finally getting a world title. I just wish that they would have initially put more faith in him like they did once he won the second Money in the Bank, and things rolled from there. So definitely a cool moment. I just wish the follow-up itself would have been a little bit better.
I also, and it literally popped into my head as I was typing, was that this whole thing actually extended for, what, 3 or 4 more years, when CM Punk decided to attack Randy Orton and referenced the fact that he punted him and left him lying and led to a WrestleMania match between the two of them and a whole feud right before the pipe bomb promo. So this is something that really kind of started getting CM Punk at least getting his name mentioned to people, or mentioned when it comes to different matches or comes to different angles. Whereas before, I think he was considered a lower tier guy, no matter what. And yes, there were guys going on after him. He wasn't the true headliner of that show. But again, like I said, he never lost the belt, and then they were able to use their continuity to bring it all the way forward to a feud with Randy Orton years down the line, where he's CM Punk's a heel, Randy Orton's a babyface, and they get a WrestleMania program out of it. I just think it was great. I think the way it was done was really well done. And the fact that I think it sticks out of my mind that he never lost the belt really, really sticks out, that they wanted to protect him and they were too sure how to do it. So they never had him lose. And, I mean, how many times do we see that happen? That didn't happen for Sheamus. That didn't happen for anybody new that's come through the system in a long time. So that I think was a cool moment for him, even if the post booking wasn't up to par. What's your number three? Let's keep rolling and get through, because I'm sure we have plenty of others that we won't get to.
Yeah. My number three is going to be him winning the WWE Championship at Survivor Series 2011 against Alberto Del Rio. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming you follow the same thing. The prerequisite, we weren't going to include Money in the Bank 2011 or the pipe bomb promo on this, because those would almost pretty much be guaranteed 1 and 2 for us. So, you know, this championship win for me, you know, he had won the Money in the Bank. He had come back and won the title again at SummerSlam and lost it to Alberto Del Rio. Then he kind of got sidetracked a little bit in his feud with Triple H, and then they ended up teaming together at a pay-per-view later. And then here at Survivor Series, you know, where it's finally like, okay, you know, you've had your world title runs. You gave you a little bit of the WWE Championship taste with the Money in the Bank and the brief run and the brief win he had at SummerSlam. Now it's yours. Here you go. You're getting your one-on-one singles match against Alberto Del Rio, the guy that you lost that Money in the Bank cash into. He took the title from you after you had just won it. They gave him the chance in Madison Square Garden. The crowd was fully behind them, chanting for him the whole time. And obviously, it was the beginning of his 434-day reign as champion. And I think what added to it after, too, was his celebration, jumping in the crowd, celebrating with the fans. That's not something you kind of see that much anymore on WWE TV. And I just think the moment in and of itself was finally, okay, you know, you're the WWE champion, and you can get rolling with this. It's your title. And it started things great down the line. Obviously, his program with Chris Jericho. He had a good program with Daniel Bryan. Everything after that, you know, he wasn't a full main event player yet, but it's here it is. I mean, he was as close as you can get with the WWE title. But, you know, here it is, your WWE championship. It's your turn to roll. And I think, like I said, what adds to this moment to me was just the celebration afterwards with Madison Square Garden chanting, him jumping into the crowd. It was just a very cool moment to see happen in front of a big, you know, wrestling audience, to see him win the WWE title and finally get it back after winning, then leaving, then winning, then losing the Money in the Bank cachet, and then getting sidetracked. And finally, after all that happened, he gets the WWE title back. And that's my number three moment.
See, I didn't put that on there, I think, one, because I hate Alberto Del Rio and anything he's involved with. And two, I had different things on my list that kind of referenced this. It's not one no, it is one of my numbers, so I'm not going to say it. But, yeah, it's one of those moments where you saw this guy who, it was the end of the summer of Punk, and what better way to top it off in the fall than have him win the big title and go out on top. And that's essentially what happened. And he did it the best way he knew, and celebrating with his fans and being able to show the CM Punk that we all know and love. And I actually had one of my honorable mentions was the match in the following pay-per-view where he wrestled The Miz and Alberto Del Rio in a triple threat ladder match or TLC match. I don't remember which one it was. But the innovative way they went about him with the handcuffs, first being handcuffed to the ladder and breaking the ladder and being able to use the cuffs, and then being handcuffed to the ring and being able to take apart the ring and get there in time. And he really did do that pretty damn fast. But, you know, he set up a ring once or twice in his life. But, yeah, I had that match on my honorable mentions simply because of the uniqueness of the booking and the way the match played out compared to his first win. Or not his first win, his second win, because it was the beginning of a lot of good and a lot of what was bound to happen and a fantastic run where we saw him turn heel halfway through the run. So it really did jumpstart everything. But I liked the next month's match a little bit more. I don't know if that came into your mind at all, but that's just where I was coming from for that one.
Yeah, that match, I agree with it. A little bit came in there. It's on my honorable things, too, just because of the simple fact, like you said, the uniqueness of everything that happened in that match with just, you know, deconstructing the ring like that and taking off the ropes. You know, I definitely see where you're coming with that one.
Okay, and like I said, it was one of those, like, for me, your choice wouldn't be so much of him winning the title there. It would be more so the culmination of the Summer of Punk, of the WWE's version of Summer of Punk. That was the culmination of it, and that was the perfect culmination of it. Going into my number three, which I have no idea where it is. Oh, there it is. It's not the one I was going to use, but you know what? I'll flip-flop and go. I'm going to be a flip-flopper and move my number two to number three and go with his 434-day reign as WWE champion. And that's obviously coming from the match that you just talked about and the win that you just talked about, and the way that he was able to not only hold on to the championship for this long, but develop and grow as a character, as a wrestler, as a star throughout this entire title reign. I mean, you saw matches against everybody. You saw matches, and then you saw storylines against everybody, with everybody. You saw storylines. You had romantic storylines. You had physical storylines. You had the Chris Jericho alcoholic father storyline. You had everything you could possibly throw at a man and pushed onto him. And then to top it off, he turns heel halfway through the run and brings in Paul Heyman as his well, not manager, as David agent, as his friend now that we know. But it was one of those things that he was able to do all of this within a title reign, and it didn't seem boring. Like, it didn't seem like we were seeing the same guy on top all the time, because he was able to evolve his character so much. And it also helped that he was able to have a great cast of characters around him. Not only was it Paul Heyman, but the Shield debuted around him. You had Brad Maddox even debuted really around him. And you had him putting on matches of the night almost every single night with whoever they decided to put him in the ring with. And whether it was a babyface or a heel or whatever he was working, it was probably the greatest title reign we'll see in years. It's title reign I've seen in my lifetime. It probably will be for a long time unless they really go with something big, because there's only one championship now. So I'm putting this up there, and like I said, I did have it at number two, but I wanted to kind of piggyback off of what you said with the Del Rio win, because that was the first day. That's what kicked off the 434 days. And I think it's amazing that that's a number that if you say it to any wrestling fan, they'll know what that number means. They'll know what you're talking about, and you'll get that sense of, oh my God, how important this title reign actually was. And who knows, it might go down in history as being the longest title reign in this era of wrestling, and that's saying something, especially for a guy who wasn't supposed to be as big as he became.
Yeah, I agree. It just goes to show you know, the versatility of CM Punk's character. He's champion 434 days and is able to have all these great little feuds and storylines there. But like you said, from Jericho to, you know, John Laurinaitis at the beginning in 2012, where the John Laurinaitis feud, he had a match with Dolph Ziggler, his Elimination Chamber match, the title. Everything he did during this title reign, I don't think you can say there was any point where you got bored with it. Everything that happened during it was pretty much done as good as it could possibly be, maybe with the exception of some of the stuff with Ryback, where they kind of booked themselves into a corner, not wanting Ryback to lose or wanting CM Punk to hold the title somehow still. So those were kind of, you know, here and there questionable. Everything about that, even, you know, going back, actually something that I had probably the worst thing on my list would have been his match that he had the night after WrestleMania 28 with Mark Henry on Raw. That little match, you know, when there was no really, you know, just, there was no feud or anything that resulted from it. It was kind of John Laurinaitis booking him into a match. And that match with Mark Henry, who a guy obviously is like not the best worker in the ring, they put on a good match together. And like I said, just during this whole time period, you just didn't find a single point where you got bored with what CM Punk was doing in the ring or doing on the mic or who he was wrestling, anything like that. He even made the AJ stuff tolerable at times. So everything that happened during this title reign, like you said, I don't know if we're ever going to get close to it ever again. I don't know if there is a wrestler or character that the WWE can make that can keep a 434-day title reign interesting like Punk had. There probably is going to be a point where they try, and I just throw a name out there, with somebody like Roman Reigns, who everybody pegs to be their next top star. I don't think as much as he's improved and as much as I agree that I think he's going to be a top star main event player down the line, I don't know if he has the versatility that CM Punk has to keep a 434-day reign interesting. So it definitely speaks to everything about CM Punk, the wrestler, how you can be champion for 434 days and pretty much not really find a boring spot in it.
Yeah, that's why it made my list. It wasn't the fact that it was over a year that he held the championship. It was the idea of this man was able to do all of it while evolving as a character, and it never felt boring. Like, say we had a 434-day Triple H title reign, which I'm sure we've come close to on more than one occasion. But that would feel like we were watching Triple H every single week, whereas this one was able, and I mean, his heel turn was slow and steady, and it wasn't just something that was out of nowhere type of thing. It was, he was wrestling and getting frustrated, and he was WWE champion, but yet the Rock The Rock and John Cena were the two that were being talked about. So you saw it all building, and all throughout with him attacking The Rock, which got a lot of support from the people in the arena, but it was his heel turn. And his heel turn as the champion by attacking one of the biggest stars our industry has ever seen is a pretty big deal. So It all kind of played into different milestones in this man's career, and all of it seemed like we were watching something special. And I do feel like that we were watching something special with that title reign, and I don't feel like it's going to be duplicated anytime soon, and I don't know if it should be duplicated anytime soon. That being said, let's get over to your number two.
And you actually just briefly mentioned my number two in the end of your talking there, and it's from Raw 1000. It's the beginning of CM Punk's heel turn, where he took out The Rock with a GTS after his match with John Cena. I think we can all agree that Raw 1000 was kind of lacking in the big news department and being good. They had a bunch of old stars coming back, but nothing really, you know, that made you say, oh, wow, oh, my God. I don't know if too many people saw it coming. I don't remember, you know, thinking that it was going to happen at some point. I think once the match ended, we kind of saw, you know, maybe this is going to happen when CM Punk refused to help John Cena getting beat down. And, you know, I kind of said in my last point where they gave CM Punk the WWE title and said, okay, you're a main eventer. But with CM Punk attacking The Rock and essentially setting up his match with The Rock down the line at the Royal Rumble, it kind of pushed him up as high as you could on the card, because as much as having the WWE title means you're the top player in the company, he still really wasn't made. He wasn't main eventing pay-per-views at that time. He was being overshadowed by John Cena pretty much every pay-per-view. Here with this moment, they're pushing him into the top tier where they're saying, okay, we trust you to go in there and go head-to-head with our big part-timers that come back during times like SummerSlam or WrestleMania. By letting him attack The Rock, saying, we have full confidence in you that come Royal Rumble time, we're going to let you fight The Rock there, and we know that you're going to make this program work out good. And just everything about that shows that you have faith in CM Punk being a top guy in the company. I thought it was well done how it happened. You kind of almost forgot that CM Punk was even there because of the camera angles that they were using. All of a sudden, just out of nowhere, you see him jump out and clothesline The Rock, and, you know, he sold the clothesline like it was death, but that's another story, and then GTS him. And, you know, everything after that just basically tells me that they had complete faith in CM Punk as their number one heel, and they knew that he could do a good program and draw money and draw ratings against The Rock leading into the Royal Rumble. And like I said, there's a point where you can be the top guy in WWE, but when they trust you enough to put you in a main event against your part-timers, former top stars like The Rock, I just think that pushes you up another level as far as not only the WWE, but the fans' minds. So that is why this moment is number two on my list.
Yeah, I would be shocked if somebody could honestly come up to me and say to me that they knew that CM Punk and The Rock were going to wrestle at the Royal Rumble. I believe that the original match was what? It was supposed to be The Rock versus Brock Lesnar? Was that supposed to be the original match at Royal Rumble? It wasn't supposed to be Punk. I know that much because I remember it being such a controversial idea that can this guy really have a good match with The Rock, and is his name really known enough to sell enough pay-per-views? And the idea was that, well, the Royal Rumble sells itself, so we can put the WWE championship match between The Rock and CM Punk on here and not really have it make a dent in our buys. And granted, and also during that, I mean, we saw where we were always talk about Super Cena. We saw Super Rock there, where he came in and got triple powerbomb through a table, and then decided that he was gonna keep wrestling, and then come in and win the WWE Championship, which I'm sure ruffled a lot of people's feathers. I'm still under the not impression, but I'm still under the idea that having Punk either retain it cleanly or retain it even by cheating and then losing it at Elimination Chamber where they're going to have a match anyway, that would be fun. That would be so much better for the story and for Punk's career. And it just didn't happen. And that was a shame for me. But, yes, like you said, that moment on Raw was, and it was Raw 1000, so it's going to be a moment that's going to be replayed for God knows how long. Well, once they start letting Punk be back on their television shows, but that's going to be one of those moments where it was, you look back at CM Punk's history and it's like, okay, well, John Cena had a couple matches against The Rock at WrestleMania, but I was the one that was able to get to him on Raw, and then I had two matches with him within 2 months, and was still able to put on fantastic matches that people wanted to see, whereas on your matches, people kind of just were hoping they were over as quickly as possible. But yeah. Absolutely should be there, and as The Rock really is one of the biggest stars to ever step foot in a WWE ring, and for CM Punk to be mentioned in the same breath as him is something that I think it's an achievement. While he probably doesn't think it's an achievement, it really does feel like it's something that should be special and something that should hold a lot of, I don't know if you would say weight or stature or something in his career that, yes, I headlined two pay-per-views against The Rock and they were great matches. I mean, you don't get that from very many people. And he was able to do it, and it seemingly do it with ease. All right, my number two that's right. I did a Christmas swap, or not Christmas swap, or whatever it's called, a Yankee swap. And this was originally my number three, but I am perfectly comfortable putting it at number two, and it's something that might be a little bit controversial, might not be. It is his feud with The Undertaker for WrestleMania 29, and my own preference and wish that the program and the build was longer than it actually was. I mean, if you think about it, they got 3 weeks to tell a full story to get people to buy tickets to WrestleMania. They got morbidly lucky in the fact that William Moody, Paul Bearer, died right at the beginning of this feud. If he hadn't passed away, I have no idea how they were going to drum up interest into this matchup, besides it just being CM Punk versus The Undertaker. There's no reason why that should be. I mean, they've wrestled before. They've had Hell in a Cell matches before. They've done everything before. But yet, this was supposed to be different, and there was nothing else at stake. It was WrestleMania. That was the big thing. But we've already seen them face off so many other times before. So it was hard for me to, especially when they had a match to see who was going to wrestle The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That bugs me, too. Like, I know it's a prestigious thing to wrestle The Undertaker at WrestleMania. I don't think you should have a match for it. I think it just should be whoever is in a feud with them or whoever wants to step up and call them out or something like that. But whatever they wanted to do, they did it. And it turned out to be what some people call a heinous, distasteful, horrible angle, and what I call almost creative brilliance. It's capitalizing on an unfortunate situation, yes, but it is also making the best of a horrible situation. I mean, the idea that CM Punk was dumping the ashes of William Moody onto The Undertaker and then rubbing it on himself. I mean, that's absurd that would actually be William Moody's ashes. That's absolutely absurd. And people, I don't know what it is, but people have such a hard time at looking at wrestling as being fictional characters on television. And if you saw that happened on well, you see worse stuff happen like that on Bones or something that's gory like that, on Dexter, on anything of that nature, you wouldn't think twice. But because it happened and these guys are in a live arena where there's people around, somehow it's completely distasteful, and I don't want anything to do with it, and it's the worst WrestleMania build of all time. Like, I wanted this to play out so much longer than it actually did, and I'm sorry they only got, 3 weeks to actually do it before their big match, but I think they capitalized on it in such a way that it made for one of the most memorable Undertaker matches, probably since the Shawn Michaels matches, because honestly, the Triple H matches did nothing for me. So it really, really struck home with me that this was a great, great build and ended up being a great match and a great story that I just wish it got more time than it actually did. But that's my number two.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I was there that night, that Raw, they had that match for The Undertaker that was in Buffalo where they talked about, each of them wanted to challenge The Undertaker. Even then, just listening to fans around me, they were kind of thinking the same thing, like, why are they having a match to see who gets to fight The Undertaker? Why not just let CM Punk fight him? That's a little side story. I completely agree. It's one of those things where if I was ever at a Comic-Con kind of type Q&A with somebody like a CM Punk, I kind of want to ask them, what was the original plan going into this feud with The Undertaker? Because, like you said, just with the unfortunate timely passing of Percy Pringle, Paul Bearer, you know, that kind of helped add fuel to the fire. And, you know, I completely agree with you is that people like to make fun of people that watch wrestling because they say, you know, oh, you know, it's fake and, you know, they wrestle in tights and blah, blah, blah. And it's TV drama. People just can't seem to get that through their heads. And like you said, you see much more. I myself watch American Horror Story, and I can tell you for a fact that there are much, much worse things that you see on a show like American Horror Story than what you see on the stuff right now. I watch Law & Order SVU. You can almost say there's worse stuff on that, too. There's much, much worse things than what has been played out on the during this feud. And I'm sure, you know, The Undertaker has a lot of pull backstage. He's a veteran. He's been there for almost 30 years now, maybe as closer to 25. But I'm sure he has a lot of say into what goes into the storyline. And I'm sure if there was something that was going to get brought up that he didn't like, he probably would have turned it down. And that didn't happen. I don't think it ever really crossed the line, like you said, and, you know, the fact that people think those are really Paul Bearer's ashes, you know, like they don't fit the whole point that this is entertainment first and foremost. But, you know, like I said, I just wish they would have had maybe a little bit more time to do it. Unfortunately, everything was so bunched together. But I agree. I think when you look back on The Undertaker's matches at WrestleMania, as far as match quality itself, I just think racking through my brain real quick off the top of my head, it's got to be at least number three behind the first two Shawn Michaels matches. Some might put it in front of the WrestleMania 26 match, but this one's definitely up there in terms of match quality in and of itself. You and I were both there. I think you can both agree this is the match the crowd was most into the whole night because nobody really wanted to see the two rematches that were coming after this. And, you know, just the whole, you know, the Undertaker spectacle entrance and CM Punk getting played in by Living Color during that match, everything about it at WrestleMania made it seem like a big-time match. And they just did everything so well in the ring together. Everything played out perfectly. It was just another one of those moments, like we said, the trusting CM Punk to go out there with The Undertaker and put on a great match, and they did it.
Yeah, and I think it helped, too, that it was that Undertaker had already had CM Punk's respect, and they had already worked together numerous times, and they were already, I don't want to say friends, but they were already guys who were coworkers, who knew what each other was capable of. And knowing their personalities and knowing, I mean, you can't really know The Undertaker's personality too much. You know CM Punk's personality. But to know that you're going to WrestleMania to wrestle The Undertaker and the two matches that are coming after you are Brock Lesnar, Triple H, which has been done a couple times before, and John Cena and The Rock, which was done last year and billed as once in a lifetime. You gotta know that rubbed Punk and Undertaker the wrong way. I know it rubbed Punk the wrong way. You could tell by his facial expression just coming down the ring. But it had to have rubbed Undertaker the wrong way just thinking about it. And, yeah, they only got 3 weeks to build up the match, whereas the other two matches were built for months and months ahead of time. But these are two guys who take so much pride in their craft and take so much pride in what they're able to perform for the audience and for people who pay their salary and pay to see them on a show, that I would not be surprised they both decided, you know what, we've had great matches in the past, but we know these four guys are going on after us. What can we do to make them start sweating and make them feel like how Triple H and Randy Orton felt after having to follow Undertaker and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. Like, that's probably what went through their mind, and you could just tell that they really, really, really wanted to steal the show. And I thought they did. That was absolutely the match of the night for me. And it was one of those, I hoped that they did more with it. And unfortunately, they only got that much. And then a week later, CM Punk disappeared for a couple of months. And, of course, 2 weeks later, Undertaker disappeared for the rest of the year. So, yeah, there's no way that they're going back to it anytime soon, but that was another one of those lightning in the bottle type moments where it was, it could have been so much bigger than what it was, but what we got really was fantastic. That was my number two, and we're rapidly approaching running out of time, but we have overtime. So our live call-ins, I apologize. If you were planning on calling in, we only have about 7 minutes left. We're both going into our number ones for our top five CM Punk. We'll probably go over a little bit, and you'll be able to catch up on any of our overtime talk and any of how we wrap up on the show on HTCWrestling.com. We're on InsidePulse.com. I'll be posting the podcast probably either tomorrow morning, tonight or tomorrow morning, where you'll be able to listen to it there, or you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. If you type in HTC Wrestling, it pops up. If you type in Inside Pulse, it pops up. If you type in Hitting the Canvas, it pops up. There's a lot of different ways to find us. You can even go to Hitting the Canvas or HTCWrestling.com, and there's a little iTunes button up in the upper right-hand corner you can click on, and it'll direct you right into your application. So that being said, Justin, let's move on, and let's get your number one CM Punk moment of his career thus far.
For me, I am going with his build up to the SummerSlam match with Brock Lesnar this past year, his most recent moment. Well, I shouldn't say his most recent moment, but really his most, recent big time match. We talked about it numerous times on the show before, but kind of like you brought up before matches, saying that this match is actually happening in the WWE. I know when Brock Lesnar was first announced about coming back, we were talking about all the potential matches that he could have with guys down the line. I think, after John Cena, it was kind of, CM Punk was the next one on the list. And unfortunately, he had to get through three Triple H matches to get there. But everything about this whole feud, obviously, the build-up with Paul Heyman was in and of itself very well done. But just him going out there and having the match he did with Brock Lesnar, I mean, here's just two guys size-wise, Triple H and Brock Lesnar, or Triple H and John Cena, from their build and size-wise, are kind of similar. Punk's a little smaller guy compared to those two, and you could tell it was kind of obvious during the kind of couple brawls they had leading up to it. But seeing him go out there and have the match he did with Brock Lesnar and just going all out and being able to play into his MMA background with some of the moves that they did and everything that happened during the match, it was just a great way to tell a story with the classic, big Goliath and Brock Lesnar and the underdog David and CM Punk. Just everything about that match on that show, I think we talked about it, how it was our match of the year in 2013, and it just goes to show you once again that CM Punk can pretty much have a good match with anybody you throw out there with him. And Brock Lesnar's a guy who's not really, since he's come back at least, not really the kind of guy who can have a good mat-based wrestling match. He's yet to have one yet. Every single one of his matches have been either no DQ or steel cage matches, or his match against the Big Show, which lasted about 2 minutes, which had a little 8-minute beatdown before that. And just to see Punk go out there and have the type of match that he did with Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, being able to, to that point, steal the show before Cena and Daniel Bryan came on, it was just great to watch. And another thing, like I said before with The Rock, the WWE, Vince McMahon, Triple H, whoever backstage has enough faith that they can throw CM Punk out there, let him wrestle one of the top part-time guys in the company and have a good match with them. And it just goes again, like I said, to cement the fact that CM Punk is somebody that is going to go down as one of the most, I guess you want to call him, versatile wrestlers in wrestling history. We can go out there and kind of like a Shawn Michaels type and just throw anybody out there with him and give him 15, 20 minutes, and he can probably put on a passable, watchable match with whoever it is. So for me, CM Punk, Brock Lesnar is number one on this list for the simple fact of being able to put on that good of a match with Brock Lesnar is something that should be cherished.
What's funny is that my number one isn't a match, and whereas yours was an actual build-up and a match. And my number one is actually, I actually have two number ones because it's two completely different categories that people can misconstrue, and I want to make myself clear. But yeah, it was that matchup and that build. The way they were able to work that out was spot on, perfect. It was exactly what they needed to do. It was the underdog versus the beast, or the best versus the beast, whatever you want to call it. But it was exactly what it needed to be, and it was also something that nobody expected. Nobody thought that that Brock Lesnar was going to wrestle CM Punk. That just doesn't happen. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't feel right when you're thinking or talking about it, and yet it happened, and it was good. It was really good. So that moment in their career, in their time, was, I think, it just clicked at the right time. There could have been a moment where it was a little awkward and, okay, well, we don't want to make Brock look too weak, and we don't want to make Punk look too strong over a guy that's three times his size, but we can't make him look like he doesn't have any chance in hell. So there was a lot of different elements that they had to work around. And they, I think, were lucky enough that they had CM Punk, Paul Heyman, two of the greatest wrestling minds, I think, in our generation, working towards one simple goal of stealing SummerSlam. And boy, did they. That was probably the only thing that SummerSlam is going to be remembered for is the best versus the beast. And then, of course, you had the screw job ending and everything else. But that matchup and that build towards that matchup was fantastic on every level. I'm pleasantly surprised, and I'm utterly pissed off that I didn't have it on my list at all. But I'll go into my number ones. As I say, the first one I'll throw out there. This one is purely a thing that I want to throw out there because probably a lot of people don't know this, and I want just to put it out there, and I'll explain why I don't really want to put it as my number one, but I think it deserves the recognition that it should get. And that is the fact that CM Punk won the Triple Crown, which is winning the Tag Team Championship, the IC Championship, and the WWE Championship in the shortest amount of time in WWF or WWE history. Before him, it was Diesel, Kevin Nash, whatever you want to call him. He did it within a year. Punk did it shorter than that. And also held the ECW title in there at some point. So for him to do that all within that short amount of time, I think is fantastic and is a true testament to the talent that he is. But I know a lot of people will say, oh, well, fake wrestling is all predetermined. Yeah, but there's got to be people that make these determinations to put these belts on these guys. That's kind of why it's my off number one. It's kind of like my 1B, simply because it's an accomplishment, but it's not an accomplishment that he was able to do by himself or he was able to control. Was there anything you want to add to that before I get to do the number one that I'm really calling my number one?
No, you can go into your number one there.
Okay, well, I have to say it was how you said that you had your Brock Lesnar match, a fantastic build. We weren't going to go with the pipe bomb promo, too easy. We couldn't go with Money in the Bank 2011. That was just too easy. But what I can go with was something that kind of fell in the middle. And that was the contract negotiations with Vince McMahon, which I think might only rival Mick Foley's Rock birthday party as far as top segments in Raw history. The picture of Vince McMahon and CM Punk in the middle of a WWE ring trying to negotiate a contract, and the way that it played out was beautiful. It was funny. It was heartfelt. You knew there was a lot of comments there that were thrown out there that were just a little too close to home for Punk, and he just shot them out. He just shot them in there and hoped somebody listened. So to me that was something that people, I don't know if they forget about it because they remember the content of the promo. They remember the ice cream bars. They remember the fact that he wants to be on all the cups, that he wants his own plane, that he wants to be able to do whatever the hell he wants, and that he had a weird mustache during the whole thing, and that he got Vince McMahon to say I'm sorry afterwards, and then the thing closed with him calling John Cena the New York Yankees and Cena acting all upset about it, even though he's a Tampa Bay Rays fan. But it was one of those moments in Raw history where I think a lot of people like remember vaguely, but don't remember how good it actually was and how the crowd reacted to that promo and how the world reacted to that promo afterwards. And it was almost more of a reaction than the pipe bomb promo because you had the pipe bomb and then you had about a week or two and then there's this whole segment, which was just kind of like him riding the wave of momentum and just added to, oh, my God, this is how great CM Punk is. And I remember speaking with Michelle Beadle and her love for wrestling and CM Punk and everything and her saying that she didn't think it could get any better than the pipe bomb promo. And then all of a sudden they had the contract signing. And she said, I couldn't turn the station even after the show ended because I just wanted to watch it again. It was just that good. But that's my number one. That was when CM Punk obviously was going into the Summer of Punk and launched him into superstardom and launched him into where he's at now. And it is kind of part of the pipe bomb and kind of part of Money in the Bank, but it's that little tiny bit in the middle that a lot of people forget about.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like you said, it's because it's surrounded by possibly the two biggest events in the history of CM Punk in the WWE. People forget about it, and I completely agree. I remember watching it. I think it almost went 20 minutes long, the whole contract negotiation, and just seeing Vince McMahon like that as a character, you never really, you know, saw something like that happen. And he goes out there, like you said, CM Punk knows how to perfectly just drop little things in there that you say, oh, wait, I think he's trying to get somebody's attention with that remark right there. He does such a good job with it. Even the follow-up after where he just went off, like he said, I'm John Cena, basically comparing him to the Yankees in his hometown of Boston because, you know, they don't want them to use that term on, even though it's true, where John Cena is kind of like the New York Yankees, almost of pro wrestling from time to time. But, yeah, I definitely agree. Like you said, I have no problem with you playing number one. You just one of those two specific events that are number one, not anything else. And like you said, people remember the ice cream bars and the jet, but I agree with you. Like you said, they don't remember everything else that was thrown in there. And just the whole aspect of seeing on TV a contract table or a table with a contract and Vince McMahon and CM Punk across the table negotiating their contract leading to Money in the Bank. Watching that play out and everything. Vince played his part well. Punk played his part well. Cena played his part well when they came out. I definitely see that as being what I did. I actually completely forgot about that on my list, but I definitely see it as something when you go back and watch it, you say, you know, this is just as good as anything else that they did in this 2-month period.
I mean, it spawned a whole, a t-shirt that, and even a downloadable T-shirt that you could use in the video game. I mean, the CM Punk ice cream bar T-shirt is awesome, and I'm just sad it didn't lead to the ice cream bars returning. But hey, what can you do when the company says
everything
no?
In the world.
Yeah, so he got himself on the souvenir cups. That was pretty much all it took. But
yeah.
Before we sign off, let's get into some of these honorable mentions because I mean I have a couple of them that I just wanted to mention. I'll let you go first though if you had ones that we haven't talked about.
I got you know obviously just his debut in general, debuting in front of that small little ECW crowd in the Hammerstein Ballroom, who obviously knew who was going in even without the promos because that's the type of audience that usually you got at those shows, hardcore ECW fans who knew everything about the indie scene, and that was just a nice moment watching him debut like that. Let's see what else do I have. I have him singing "Happy Birthday" to Rey Mysterio's daughter during his run on the Straight Edge Society. That was just, you want to talk about a creepy heel promo, that right there is almost what you want to see, just him singing happy birthday the way he did to Rey's daughter. And also, you know, just his whole feud with Rey Mysterio. People are going to look back on CM Punk's time in the WWE and they'll think of his matches with John Cena and his WrestleMania feud with Chris Jericho and the Brock Lesnar Undertaker matches. People are going to forget that him and Rey Mysterio had some very good matches just throughout their entire run, not just during the Straight Edge Society stuff. I can remember being at Armageddon 2008, and they fought in the – I can't remember if they were – I don't think it was for the ice, but I want to say it was the finals to face the Intercontinental Champion in a tournament. And being in that – being in the arena watching that match, it was CM Punk and Rey Mysterio. I thought they had the match of the night. And, I mean, most people will talk about the triple threat match between Edge, Jeff Hardy, and Triple H for the WWE title. That match was good. But I remember after watching that Punk-Rey Mysterio match, I turned to my friend and I said, that match is going to be the match of the night. And it was very, very, very good match. And those two just had such great chemistry in the ring together that I think people are going to, unfortunately, it's not going to be at the top of the list when people talk about Punk's, you know, rivalries, but it definitely should be. And if you ever look back on CM Punk's career and reexamine, I think people are going to forget about this and then go back and watch it and just see how good it is. And then the only other thing I have on here that I'll just kind of bring up real quick is his run as a commentator on Raw. He was very funny during that entire time he was doing the commentary. Of course, he had the big, you know, you spilled my diet soda line while he was doing commentary. And just everything he did about it the whole time was just, you know, funny and a nice added piece to the commentary that obviously today we just see completely lacking, and sometimes you just want to put the TV on mute listening to the announcers talk. And I just will say one thing that's kind of popped in my head real quick is his, just probably as far as a funny moment goes, his joke backstage at SummerSlam 2011 when Stephanie McMahon went to go shake CM Punk's fan, and Punk's response was, "I would do that, but I know where that hand's been." Just obviously, you know, the crowd reacted to it right away. I knew what it meant right away. If this is a PG show, I won't say what it is right away, but I'm sure if you're out there listening to this, you definitely probably know what it means. So that's my honorable mention list.
Yeah, I almost put on the Raw commentating gig. Not so much him being a commentator when he had the shoulder injury, because even though that was great, to me what stands out is when everybody was on strike, and he comes down to the, or Triple H comes down to the ring and asks him to go over and be a commentator, and asks if he could wear his blazer. and goes over there and proceeds to commentate by himself for the next matchup between John Cena and somebody else, and it was absolutely amazing television just to sit and listen to. But it's him on commentary. No matter, and they don't do it anymore, and I think it's more because they're scared to give him a live mic anymore. And I'm still shocked they give JBL a live mic, considering how much we had to edit him when he was on SmackDown. But him on commentary is usually gold, and you can't just overlook the idea of him being probably being one of the better acts on commentary in recent memory. Going back through some of my honorable mentions, like I said, I have just some of the most random things that I could think of. One of them was just the heel lines and brings back Paul Heyman when we thought that Paul Heyman was going to be done with Brock Lesnar. I thought that was great, and it was a nice little nod to not only their past, but it was also a way to get Paul Heyman on TV when nobody thought he was going to be on TV anymore. And their chemistry together was fantastic. I had the infamous, I received a text from my sister, Kevin Nash. Wow, I thought he was dead. LOL. One of my favorite lines from any promo that I've ever heard on Raw. I couldn't leave that out. I had to throw that in there. His three-match series with Samoa Joe, putting ROH on the map. This was the first legitimate Summer of Punk. This wasn't WWE Summer of Punk. This was ROH's Summer of Punk, and their three matches together, if you get the opportunity or if anybody gets the opportunity, give it a look. You'll see what I mean when I got criticism with my 10 thoughts on Impact when I said that if Samoa Joe had stayed in his ROH tape, but gained the experience he's gained over the last 10 years, a Samoa Joe Undertaker match at WrestleMania would be mind-blowing, I think, to people. It's kind of the idea of a Bray Wyatt Undertaker match at WrestleMania, except probably more athletic and more hard-hitting. The other ones that I have, Straight Edge Society. Introducing a whole new generation to Living Color and Cult of Personality. I've never seen a song like that blow up the way that it did once that song was reintroduced as CM Punk's theme music, which fits him so extremely well. The last two I had was being a part of introducing the world to the Shield. I thought that was I couldn't really put that in my top five as much as I wanted to. I thought about it a lot, but there never really was a moment where like he introduced the Shield or he was talking with the Shield and the Shield was a part, or they had an 8-man tag where he was with them. So you can't really say that they were together, but obviously storyline-wise, that they were brought up to protect Punk, and that's how they got him on the roster. And now look where they're going, and what the expectations are for them. It's mind-blowing to think that everybody thought that Dean Ambrose was going to be a huge star, and I still think he is. I still think Seth Rollins is going to be the new Jeff Hardy without the issues. I think Seth Rollins is going to catapult himself on to SmackDown and immediately become a mid-card champion, and take that slow burn all the way up to the top. And then after that, I would have to say, Roman Reigns, his future is obviously the brightest right now, because good God, is he starting to resemble The Rock. And if we have another resurgence of The Rock, that's going to be not only phenomenal, but scary, because there's only one Rock. There's only one man that can ever be The Rock. But I remember, and I mentioned it to my wife, has been a big fan of Roman Reigns for more than one reason since he debuted, but she really liked the way he worked, the agility and the believability of everything that he's able to do. But the one thing I noticed while watching it was backstage, where one of their new female commentators came up for a quote from him, and he like almost sweet talked her. He said something and called her baby and gave her a sly smile. And in my mind, it was automatically thinking of The Rock. Like, that was exactly something The Rock would have said, whether it was him as just starting out as The Rock, or it was him as he is now. So I'm really interested in seeing where Roman Reigns goes. And the last thing I had on my list was him walking out of the WWE minutes before Raw began. Unfortunately, that is going to go down as a top CM Punk moment if this is the last time we've seen CM Punk. That's just how it's going to happen. He left his job minutes before they were supposed to go on air, and you just don't do that. That's hard to do. And it's hard, and it's hard to say that, and it's for a guy who you want to be one of the best and be recognized as one of the best of all time. And if his career ends on this type of down note, it's going to suck, and it's going to suck for a very long time. And I hope it turns out into a Steve Austin situation where he realizes what happened, and he's able to just kind of make the call and say, yeah, what I did is wrong, and I shouldn't have done that, and I don't agree with what we were talking about, and I'm still kind of pissed off with what led to me leaving. But I understand how I did it. I didn't handle it the right way. Unfortunately, that, like I said, that's going to be a major part of his career and his legacy if this is the last time we've seen him. But do you have anything to add to any of those before we sign off for tonight?
I kind of agree with you at the last point, and, you know, just knowing Punk's background and how vocally and how he's not afraid to stand up and say, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, I just don't know if it's something that we'll ever see. And like you said, it kind of sucks as a performer, because you never want to see even anybody go out the way like that. You always want to see him kind of have, especially for a main event guy like that, a proper, like, send-off. And unfortunately with Punk, because just knowing how he is and knowing how he's not afraid to back down from anybody, I don't know if it's going to happen. Maybe he just needs a few months off to recuperate and rejuvenate and then come back. And hopefully, I think that's what every wrestling fan wants. But honestly, you know, I think Austin was willing more to compromise than Punk might be somewhere down the line. Maybe Punk looks back and says that he regrets how he did it. But I just think this is a little bit different situation than what you're going to see with Steve Austin. And this may be something that might not get resolved at all. And it's kind of just scary.
Yeah, I'm interested, and I keep saying I'm interested, and I'm looking forward to the next couple months, but my opinion is that he's not going to be back before WrestleMania 30. Even if he said he could be back before WrestleMania 30, I don't know if WWE would want him back for WrestleMania 30. They might say, you know what, you blew it, and we already have other things in place, and we can take you back for Extreme Rules or do something of that nature. But it's a hard circumstance to be in because he is so popular. He does bring in a lot of money. I know I check every couple days and see if there's been markdowns on his stuff on WWEshop.com. Because you know that's when things are starting to hit a rough patch, and so far they're still putting out new things. So that's a good sign. It's a good sign that they started releasing new merchandise for somebody compared to either stopping completely or marking down everything to just get rid of it. One thing I will say, though, I am very happy that I purchased two of the limited edition CM Punk Hot Topic Finalmation guys, which are, one, awesome. I can't put it any better than that. It's him wearing the Bret Hart tights, so absolutely fantastic. But, two, it was that time where I bought it, and then 2 days later he walked out, and I know Inside Pulse writer Chris Sanders was a little ticked off because he had opened his, and I had to gloat a little bit and mention that I had purchased two. So I was able to open one and keep the other one and nicely, safely hidden and hopefully make a small little profit off of it if the phone doesn't make a return anytime soon. But that being said, we want Punk back on the show. We want entertainment, and he was entertaining. He was what we wanted to see. And right now, we're not really getting what we wanted to see. We're kind of getting Daniel Bryan. If you don't expect out spoilers, block your ears for 2 seconds. Cesaro doesn't have his first name anymore. For God knows what reason. Hopefully just saving some money on merchandising so they can, cut off some letters. Who knows? But Cesaro gets a clean win over Randy Orton, which is incredible when you think about it. And, you know, it's all just a setup to make him look vulnerable for the Elimination Chamber, but Cesaro gets a clean win over Randy Orton. That's saying something. And if they are ready to push Cesaro to the top, and they're ready to push Daniel Bryan back up, and they're ready to get some of the new guard to take over for the old guard, we're going to get good television. It's when the old guard refuses to step away or is constantly booked into the top main event that we start to get problems and we start to get angry and people start to turn out of wrestling. And so far they've had a nice little mix of what's going to be the status going forward, but it looks like it's going to be the new guard with the Shield and with the Wyatts and with Cesaro and Bryan and all these guys. And I love it. I love the idea that that there is a new guard for them to go to. It's not John Cena and Randy Orton, which drove me nuts on Monday that they kept saying that they debuted 10 years ago and they've been feuding for 10 years. Why the hell do you tell your audience that these two guys are so stale that they've been wrestling each other for 10 years? That is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. And it was done over and over and over again, and I couldn't believe it. But besides the point, the future, or the immediate future, looks bright. And as long as things don't, if people don't start panicking, if people don't start reverting back to not their old tricks, but their old standbys, we might be on the verge of 2014 being a year of some very hot new talent, and not so much new, but breakout talent. And it could be a very fun year of new faces, and I know I'm looking forward to it. Justin, any closing thoughts before we sign off?
I completely agree with everything you just said there. I'm hoping that, 2014 is finally the year where we get to see some new talent on top, and we don't, for some reason, 3 months down the road, go back to John Cena, Randy Orton, match number 75,000.
Oh, God. I don't know if you read my Raw report, but I had trouble staying awake. And once I know they were in L.A., I can only imagine how many people took off as soon as they heard what the main event was, because you're in L.A., you're sitting in traffic. If you have any opportunity whatsoever to get out of there before traffic really kicks into high gear, you're taking it. So if somebody says, hey, it's John Cena versus Randy Orton in the main event, if you don't have an 8 or 9 year old next to you, you're taking off. So if they have to go back to those two as their top guys and their top program, or Triple H, or something of that nature, it's gonna be a hard pill to swallow, and it's gonna be a rough year. But right now it looks bright. So stop putting bad thoughts in my head. Like I said, TNA is looking good. TNA's got some new stars coming in. And by new stars, we mean new stars in the Wolves, and hopefully some other guys that are on the indie scene that you may not have heard of, but are looking forward to seeing Adam Pearce. So I'm looking forward to wrestling in 2014. It's been a long time since I could say that, but I'm looking forward to it, and I'm hoping that my hopefulness and my positive outlook on pro wrestling isn't wasted upon just a false hope and a lazy booking. That being said, this is the HCC Wrestling Coldcast. That was our top 5 CM Punk moments of his career thus far. Again, he didn't retire. He didn't quit. Or, well, he quit, but he did it. He went home, but he could be back. We don't know. We want him back. This was just celebrate a man who we all know is probably one of the best that we can will see in our generation, and one of the best performers that we ever had the opportunity to see live. And we're hoping, God, hope that he's back sooner rather than later. But again, for Justin Sirwanka, I am Matt Herrick. This has been the HCC Inside Pulse Wrestling Pulsecast. We'll be back next week with our Elimination Chamber pay-per-view preview show, hopefully with Cam. It's Cam Daugherty. and we can get the whole crew back together again for one more show before the launch of the WWE Network and maybe a huge breakthrough pay-per-view in the Elimination Chamber. But until next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, again, I'm Matt Herrick signing off. Have a good night. If you're in, if you live in the Northeast, stay inside because it's damn cold out right now.